We want to take a look at Judges chapter 8. And Gideon now becomes immoral within his own personal life. And as I mentioned before, in chapter 6, it mentions the tremendous fear that he had. He was a coward. He would not go out and do anything. And then in chapter 7, we saw how courageous he was as God began to put things together within his own personal life. But then in chapter 8, he compromises. I read a story the other day before we jump in. It said on September 29th, and it is so important, this story. I want to really take a few moments. On September 29th, 1938, Britain, France, Germany, and Italy signed the Munich Pact, granting Hitler the northern part of Czechoslovakia. Britain Prime Minister, and at that time it would be Chamberlain, flew over to meet with Hitler. And Europe was about ready to explode. Hitler was going berserk, and he was threatening, and he was coming unglued. And no doubt he was possessed, and he had tremendous charisma. And he hassled the Prime Minister all the way through the evening, and finally, in the middle of the evening, he broke. And it says that in the middle of the night, on September 21st, Britain and France ambassadors woke up Czechoslovakian ambassador to inform him that we, Britain, are not going to honor their obligation. In other words, they thought that by giving Hitler what he wanted, the war would go away. And so they compromised their conviction. They did something that was unheard of. 8 days later, Munich Pact was signed, giving Hitler everything he wanted. The Britain Prime Minister was hailed as a hero, and a sense of relief flooded Europe. And the very next day, Winston Churchill stood up, profound and prophetic words, and listened very carefully, because this is the greatest statement, I believe, in a compromised life. Britain and France had to choose between war and dishonor. They chose dishonor. They will have war. This people should know that we have sustained a defeat without war, and that terrible words have for the time being been pronounced against the Western democracy. Thou art weighed in the balance and found wanting. He's speaking to the Britain Prime Minister. And do not suppose that this is the end. This is only the beginning of the reckoning. This is only the first slip, the first sip, the first foretaste of a bitter cup which will be preferred to us year after year, unless by a super recovery of moral health and mental vigor we arise again to take our stand of freedom in the old times. And what Churchill was saying is that two things happen when you compromise. Number one, you cannot compromise with evil and win. And number two, you cannot compromise and ever have victory within your life. And we see the outcome of that signing. In other words, Hitler got what he wanted and turned, and it became a war. And every time I compromise within my life, I'm going to lose ground. And so here we find that Gideon is now compromising everything that God did. And I can do that. My wife can do that. You can do that. We can begin to compromise the very thing that God has done. And it usually happens when all of a sudden we've made it. We feel somewhat of a security, and we see the blessings of God, and we see the hand of God upon our life. And we see the strength and how God is using us and how God is holding us together, and we take things for granted. And we never think the family's going to fall apart. We never think things are going to happen. And so we begin to lower the standard of our life. And the fire begins to go out, and the passion begins to leave. And then all of a sudden, Satan comes in and wipes you out. And when I begin to compromise, it means that I've taken my eyes off of the King of Kings. And the tragic thing is that in chapter 8, there's no praise. There's no adoration. There's no song like the song of Moses. And there's no song of Deborah. Or there's no song at all. And in other words, it was just one tremendous time in his life, and then he turned. And so he became isolated and very selfish. And so we pick up the story in verses 1 through 3 of some of the major dangers. And the tragic thing is he was able to weather the storm, but he sunk in that ship of prosperity. In other words, it isolated him. He was no longer able to get a handle on his own personal life. And it says in verse 1, "And the men of Ephraim said unto him, Why hast thou served us thus, and called us not when thou wentest to fight the Midianites? And they did chide with him sharply." And you remember that the Midianites were in battle, 135,000. Gideon was now with his men that God had reduced down to 300. And Gideon chose not to look to Ephraim. And I believe there was a reason. I believe that this was one of the largest of all tribes. And it had a pattern of tremendous pride within their life. And so he declares in verse 2, "And he said unto them, What have I done now in comparison to you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? And God has delivered into your hands the prince of the Midians, Orpah and Zeb. What was I able to do in comparison of you?" Then their anger was abated towards him when he had said that. Now the thing I see in verses 1 through 3 is what happens when God begins to bless your life. Others become very jealous. And one of the major things you're going to find out in your life is that most of the problems are going to come from within the church, not outside the church. And it really shouldn't be that way. We should be, number one, a family. And when Satan sees that someone is being blessed, Satan comes in. He brings division. He begins to bring a disharmony. And we begin to become jealous. And so we now are fighting each other and we're not fighting the enemy. And I think, once again, as I look at Gideon here, he did a couple things really, really well. Four things, I just jot it down. Number one, unity was more important than personal pride. In other words, the unity between the families is more important than the pride between us right now. So Ephraim, hey, God has blessed you. God has given you so much. God has given you these two kings. All I did was blow a trumpet. And so the unity was more important than the pride. And sometimes our pride gets in the way of unity. Secondly, there's no time to fight each other. In other words, if we're fighting each other, we're not fighting the enemy. And you remember, Gideon was on his way to catch another 15,000 to wipe them out. God wiped out 120. There were still 15,000 that had to be caught. And they were running. And here they're talking, they should be running. And we should be running, but we're fighting. And if we could stop fighting and start running, we could take over what God wants us to do. But we fight among us. And then number three, not allowing yourself to get hurt. In other words, he could have said, "That's it, God, I'm out of here. I'm wounded." You're going to be wounded, but you got to be bigger than the wound. You got to be able to calm the situation down. He spoke softly. He was able to appease them and kind of back them up and let them see what God was doing. And then lastly, I like this the very best. After the whole thing was done, he took off and started chasing them. So he had the ability to go through that whole gymnastic and not lose the purpose of his life. Now, if that happens to us, that's it. I'm going to Starbucks. I'm going to drink a cappuccino and get depressed and sit on this cliff and rub my stomach. That's it. I can't do it no more. I'm going to find another church. And that's not the way it should be. So you run into an obstacle, you're going to deal with it. And you're going to minister the best of your ability. And you're going to try to explain the situation. But you're going to rise higher and you're going to move on. In other words, you're not going to sit here till you die. And that's the word of the Lord for us tonight. God wants us to overcome the pain in our heart and keep moving. And aren't you glad that Jesus Christ did that? He took the pain, but he kept on dying. And finally, he was resurrected. He could have stopped, but he didn't. And so I find very simply in verses 1 through 3, the tremendous danger of jealousy. And then in verse 4, "And Gideon came to Jordan, passed over. He and 300 men were with him, and they were faint, and they were pursuing, so they were faint-hearted. And he said unto the men of Succoth, Give, I pray you, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, 300. and they be faint, and I pursue after Zeba and Zalmon, the king of the Midianites. And also look at verse 4. It says that all 300, in other words, not one of Gideon's men were lost. God turned the tide. So we pick up in verse 8. Now these two men took off and their host with them, about 15,000 men in verse 10. All that were left of the host of the children of the east, for there fell 120,000 men that drew a sword. So God wiped out 120,000. There were 135,000 to start with in chapter 6. And Gideon went up by the way of them, dwelt in the tent of the east of Nobah and Jogbah, and smote the host and secured it. And when Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and took the two kings. It was about a 71-mile run. And Zeba and Zalmunna discomfited all the host. And then in verse 13, and Gideon, the son of Joaz, returned from the battle to sun up. So he caught these guys. They wiped out everybody. And he said unto Jethro, his firstborn, up, slay them. Now I want you to underline, but the youth drew not his sword. Now some believe that he was seeking to embarrass these two kings by having his son kill them. They would do that sometimes. I don't believe that. I believe that Gideon had a real hard time with leadership, had a real hard time with confronting, had a real hard time with decisions. And all of a sudden, he now throws his son in front of him. And his son can't do it. And all of a sudden, these two men now rebuke Gideon. And so we read here in verse 21, as the man is, so is his strength. And Gideon arose and slew these men, took away the ornaments that were on their camel's neck. So the two men said, listen, Gideon, you do what you have to do. You take the responsibility. Now, I'm going to build this because I really believe it's true. I believe that if you are struggling in an area, and the Holy Spirit is seeking to give you victory, and you constantly are taking it through your whole life, not trusting God in that area of your life, you eventually will probably get the victory, but it's going to cost your family and others around you, because they're going to see the tremendous struggle you're having not trusting God. And one of the great things that happen in the church is that husbands are not trusting God. So the wife becomes very insecure. And the husband comes home and dumps on the wife. And so the wife has no security that her husband is looking to God. And the mother all of a sudden is not in the Word. She's all over the place. And so she's disciplining the children out of anger. And the kids never hear the Lord's name used in the right way. They never see the devotion. They don't see that. What they see is shopping centers and malls and everything else. And so the kids are growing up just like we are. So it takes a man and a woman who are really committed understanding what it is to raise your children. Because the very thing that you have oftentimes, you will pass down to your own children. So if God has you in that area of overcoming fear, then for the Lord's sake and for your family's sake, say, God, I don't want to go down this road much longer. I need victory. I need you to show me. Because I'm going to show you in a moment, something happened that just turned his whole life around. And so he took the sword and he destroyed the king. Now notice in verse 22, then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, rule over us, both thou and thy son's son, in other words, be the king and deliver us from the hand of the Midianites. And Gideon answered correctly. Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. In other words, God is going to be the one that rules over you. Now listen very carefully. He said the right thing. But I'm going to show you at the very end of the study, in just a few moments, that he really didn't mean what he said. It comes out crystal clear. He said it, but in his heart, he really didn't mean it. Or if he meant it, the seed was put in his thought that he would one day be able to rule. And so we read in verse 24. And Gideon said unto them, I would desire a request of you. I don't want to be your king. I just want your money. That you would give me every man the earrings of his prey. For they had the gold earrings because they were Ishmaelites. In other words, they had all kinds of earrings. And they answered, "We will willingly give them." And they spread a garment and did cast there every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the gold that they cast in was 1,700 shekels, which came out to be about 57 pounds of gold. He was a multi-millionaire. "So I don't want to be your king, but I want your money and I want what you have. Give me your earrings. I don't want to be your king, but I'll take your gold." And Gideon, here it is in verse 27, made an ephod. Now that's what the priest wore. It was like an apron. "Therefore, he put it into the city, even Ophrah," in other words, where he lived. "And all Israel went thither a-whoring after it, which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house." So here's what happened. God gave him the victory. They said, "We want you to be the king." And when all of a sudden he is now looking, he sees the opportunity to become a very wealthy man. And so he says, "Give me the earrings." Everyone dumps them, 57 pounds of gold. Out of that, he made an ephod out of solid gold. So the very thing that his dad did was to build an altar. The very thing that God told him to destroy, he is now building this thing for the people to worship. What went wrong? Then he took it to his own city. He didn't take it to Jerusalem because the high priest was in Jerusalem and the high priest was the one who had the authority. But he left it in his city so people would have to come to him. So this idea of being a king really stuck in his brain. He didn't want to be a king. God was going to be the king, but he wanted to live like a king. He wanted to have the money of the king. He wanted to have the clothing of the king. He wanted to have the women of a king. He wanted to have the concubines of the king. In other words, he wanted everything, but he would let God be the king. Something went crazy within his life. And so we read on. A very sad thing. They made this ephod. He brought it to his own city. And it was a very incredible moment. Whoring after it. And another reason, he could have destroyed it. Could have stopped it. He didn't. In other words, he didn't have the heart. He was afraid to stop it. He was afraid to deal with Ephraim. He was afraid to kill the people. This fear really destroyed his life. And I believe that God will give you an opportunity to overcome it. But if you constantly resist, then you're going to constantly go back into it. And so we find very simply that they were snared. In other words, no longer was he in fellowship. And then in verse 28, "Thus the Midianites subdued before the children of Israel, so they lifted up their heads no more, and the country was quieted for 40 years, all the days of Gideon." Now what did he do? Did he bring revival? No. Did he bring reformation? No. What did he do? He took his money, and all of a sudden, he had 70 boys. But they were from one woman. He had many, many wives. And then it says, "And his concubine that was in Shechem, she bore him a son whose name was Abimelech." Now, this is the story. All of a sudden, this man had it all. And when someone said, "You know, you could be a king. You could be great." Huh. You know, like they say all the time, you're believing in your PR. It stuck. It should not have stuck, but it stuck. And so a king has to have a bounty. So he looked at the camel and stripped the camel and took all the earrings and became a very wealthy man. He looked around and took all these women. And then he had a prostitute in Shechem. She had a baby. He publicly dedicated the baby in Shechem. And he personally named the baby. It says right here, he named the baby. And guess what Abimelech means? Now remember, he named it. This is what it means. My father, the king. It was in his heart to be a king. He knew he couldn't, but it was in his heart. And here's the tragic story in verse 33 and 34. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again, went a-whoring after Balaam, and Baal-berith, their god. Now, the word Baal-berith means they made a covenant with the god of Canaan. So it's not just worshiping, they made a covenant, so they're worse than anybody else. The children of Israel, and underline, remembered not the Lord, neither their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side. And I personally hold Gideon responsible, because he was a lousy leader. He taught them how to trust God, but he didn't teach them how to stay humble. The good thing is he's in a hall of faith. Gideon, in the hall of faith. How did he make it? The grace of God. How are you going to make it? The grace of God.